Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. For those of you who are counting, I think we're on episode 23 here. My name's Hiro TJ, and I'm joined by the reigning Amiibo King, Amiibo Jason. How you doing, buddy? I'm doing amazing. We've got a lot of super awesome stuff to discuss today. Late breaking news that you just shocked me with the last couple minutes because I somehow missed it. So this is like super late breaking for us. And before we roll into that, let's just get things started with what we've been doing gaming-wise. I just saw some tweets of your exciting news.
Yeah.
So what have you been working on?
I'm going to do my best to be like happy throughout this because, as you mentioned, we got some weird late-breaking news a few moments ago. So I'm going to do my best to make it through this. But that being said, I have been really diving into the world of console modding. And it's fun. It really is. There is something about the original Game Boy that, for me, it's such a blast. It is pure nostalgia for me at its very, very best. So I have been, in the past, tinkering with the Game Boy Color, putting backlights on it, just modding the colors, and I finally got my very first full-sized, original, 1989, some people call it the DMG, for Dot Matrix Game Boy. I have that thing finally modded with this amazing, like, clear green plastic case, and I have it completely and fully backlit. Which
it's gorgeous, by the way, people. Like, if you were not alive in the 80s, you can't appreciate what it's like to have a backlit Game Boy, because we used to have to rig those things.
Yes,
with
we did.
Crazy little battery sucking accessories that only half worked. That is a masterpiece, what you just created. Yeah, there
back in the day it was tough. It was tough to be a Game Boy fan, and we got by. It was fine. It was one of those things where it's just, how do I word it? You never really realize that something's wrong at that point because you were just so blown away that you could play video games on the go, in the car, on the couch, without, you know, the need for a TV in your bedroom when you're supposed to be going to sleep or studying. So we let that stuff slide. But now, obviously, in 2020, you can't really do that anymore. I mean, nobody wants to play their Game Boy underneath a light or with one of those nerdy little worm lights. So this is the best way to go. And they're getting really cheap to do. Most, like, the kit that I used for this, it was $65. It came with an IPS LCD screen, and it came with the entire front circuit board, completely replacing the front circuit board of the original DMG. So it was very, very minimal work to get this thing up and running. There was some case modification I had to do. I had to cut some plastic off. A little bit of soldering. I had to solder the speaker on and solder it off the old board. But besides that, it was a cakewalk. It's still original hardware, except for the screen and the screen board. But this is the original 1989 hardware still, and that's what makes me happy. I know you can emulate Game Boy on anything. I know you can go out for $20 and buy like a clone that will play Game Boy games, but there's something magical about using original hardware, and I'm going to keep doing that. But that,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, the reason why original hardware becomes obsolete is, like you said, our standards change. We used to accept a diminished quality gameplay experience because it was portable.
Yeah.
But now in the lifetime of the Switch, portable and console is the same standard. So the best way to experience retro game hardware is with making modern mods. I really think we've been talking about this a little bit, but you got to start showcasing some of these on the channel.
You know, I thought about it.
That stuff's awesome.
I'm going to be perfectly honest here. And this is going to be like the Jason Gano's hot take of the show. My life is pretty much work. So I wake up, get my kid ready for school, which, by the way, I love. I don't consider that work. That is one of the best joys of my life. I go to work, I come home, I do Nintendo Wire stuff, write articles. In many cases, I'm editing video or making new video. I think I'm going to keep this one for me. This is going to be Amiibo Jason's little thing, I think, for the time being.
Maybe you amass enough of them, you can kind of do a mod showcase.
I might do that. I did ask people if they'd be curious to see the process. But after I put that tweet out, I'm like, do I really want to turn this into work? Or do I want to keep this as something I am genuinely excited about? And granted, yes, I love Nintendo Wire. I love making videos. But at the end of the day, there's just something nice about having something in the hobby that is just for me. I miss the days when I could watch a Nintendo Direct and just watch the Nintendo Direct, right?
Right, right.
Now it's like, oh my God, they just announced this. I'm so excited. Wait, I can't be excited. I have to go to Twitter and I have to write an article and I have to make a video. And then your head explodes and you get sad. So for the time being, the Game Boy modification is going to be just, it's going to be my little secret. I'll show you the final products on Twitter.
And there is a nice little, there's a good work in progress video that I think Happily Candied stealthily captured that she put. And that was cool to see on Twitter.
Yeah, she totally snuck that.
You do look very in your zone there. It actually kind of reminded me of how I feel when I'm doing custom Amiibo. Because you were like in the Amiibo Jason zone.
It's zen. It really is. It's my...
Yeah.
I knew the case was coming. I got the screen in the mail yesterday. And I just so happened upon a big lot of broken Game Boys. Like, original Game Boys, this guy's like, they all work. The screens are all shot. $5 a piece. So I'm like, $5 a piece? I can handle that. The first
one... Yeah, that's not bad.
The first one was just a very messed up screen lens. So that was a $2 fix. I got a new case for it, put a new screen lens on it, and they're... I pretty much spent $11 and got a brand new looking Game Boy. This one that I modified, the screen was shot. It was in bad shape. But I got it for $5. I spent $60 on the LCD kit, $7 on the case, and... If I wanted to sell this, I'd get over $100 for it, I'm sure. But this one's staying in my collection, for sure.
For sure.
But that's what I've been up to, besides playing the Final Fantasy VII demo on loop.
Yes.
Which I've already talked about. But TJ, what about you? What have you been up to?
You inspired pretty much my gaming experience over the past week.
Oh.
A while back, you were like, you know, you should really get back into Cuphead. And I had mentioned, I think on the podcast, that I played through a good chunk of the game. I think I was somewhere in World 3 with my brother, co-op. And then, you know, things happened.
Yeah.
And we got distracted. We got busy. I moved to Taiwan. And so that pretty much put the kibosh on that. But I did buy it on Switch. We played it on, I think, PC or Xbox.
Sure.
And then I kind of started playing it. And I was getting a little into it. My kids were playing it. And they were into it. And I think I realized, and I'm not for sure on this because I don't know too much about the game, when you play it on co-op, I think these bad guys are just like damage sponges where they just eat so many bullets.
Yeah.
Because when I played it on single player, it got a lot easier. And so I got a little bit addicted to the game loop. And I have such a tremendous appreciation for the way that the game is relentlessly fair with how brutal it is.
Yeah.
Because you sometimes have games that are just savagely difficult for the sake of being difficult, but the more you play it, the better you get at it, which is really how you want things to be in an ideal situation with anything that you find challenging. Is you do it more and more, you get better at it. And that's kind of how I felt about this game. And I just really got into it, and I started playing it a lot, and I was able to 100% it over this past weekend. And that felt like a really satisfying accomplishment for me.
So you 100%ed it. I did not. I beat the game. So I beat the devil. I got the good ending, I guess. But I did not go through the process of going through the 100% route. I was just too happy.
I did it on accident. I did it on accident, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I played through the game. I was pretty thorough about it. I didn't do everything that you can do in the game.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not factored into the percentages. But I... Like, I didn't get every achievement, which is getting an S rank on some and stuff like that. But that doesn't count towards your completion percentage, I suppose. But after I beat the devil, I had 99%. And I was like, what did I not get? And I looked and I beat every level. And I was like, oh, I never played the tutorial. So I played through the tutorial. Yeah. There was like one coin in there. And then, boom, 100%.
Awesome.
I guess it's because I had already played the tutorial a couple times already on my when I played it originally and then with my kids. And I think that the controller configuration, once I remapped it and I found the buttons that I found most satisfying, the game became fun. When I had to think about the buttons, it was really kind of a torturous experience. But when I laid them out in the way that made sense to my brain, I was like, okay, I got this. And it was a total blast. It really was. So I'm glad that you kind of pushed me that little bit.
Yeah, I feel like you're the perfect
to go back
person
to it.
For that game.
It reminded me how much I really love platforming style action.
Yep.
It might even be my favorite genre. It's not my favorite game or favorite game series,
yep.
But if I had to say like the games that the most number of games that I enjoy, they kind of do tend to fall into that genre.
So I need to ask this before we move on from Cuphead. What was the boss that gave you the most trouble?
That stinking robot.
Yeah.
That,
the bullet hell stage, yeah.
That robot drove me bananas, and it definitely took me the longest to do, too. I guess the experience that I found the most frustrating was King Dice,
yeah.
Even though he wasn't near as hard, because I had to do it a ton of times.
Yeah.
I got really good at fighting every single one of those bosses on the... I guess if you never played Dice King, there's a random component. Not exactly random, but you have to roll the dice,
yeah,
and get 1, 2, or 3. You have a strong influence over it. If you get really good, you can choose 1, 2, or 3. But I never got quite perfect at that. So I would get all the way through. I had a perfect run,
yeah,
where I got all the way right to the end, and I had not gotten touched one time by any enemy. Plus, I had gotten some extra hits from the bonuses,
yeah,
and I got hit with the start over.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And so I had to go all the way back to the beginning, and like, for whatever reason, even though you have some safe spaces because you've already cleared them, I hit every not safe space and just got depleted to nothing. And I was so dejected and so disappointed. That's the only time mid-boss where I actually broke my play session. I feel like the game has a lot to do with momentum.
Yeah.
And just like with a few other games I found to be tremendously challenging, like Hollow Knight and Ori and the Blind Forest, if something was really hard, I just kept doing it over and over and over and over again. And these games are set up in a way where you get to start pretty much right at the most challenging thing.
Yeah.
Cuphead being just a big boss rush, basically. With the exception of 6 running gun stages, it's a boss rush. So you just go from boss to boss, and you kind of get to start exactly where you die. And that Dice King broke me,
yeah,
at that point, where I was like, okay, you know what? I need to walk away because I'm not enjoying this anymore. I'm being short and impatient with my children. They're walking in front of the screen,
yeah,
during critical dodging moments. Like, I'm not the man that I want to be right now. I got to put this game down. But then I came back later that same day,
yeah,
and kind of got back into the groove and was able to do it. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's how I felt with the robot, too. Robot was by far the hardest for me.
By far.
But
once I
learned the pattern for the bullet hell section, I could do that stage with my eyes closed. There was some like Matrix Neo moment where I'm like, whoa, I know Cuphead. And I could just, I could navigate through it. And it was the most amazing feeling ever. And that's the nice thing about Cuphead is once you figure it out, once you figure out the patterns and what you're supposed to do, the tells of the bosses, the game gets exponentially easier. Like with,
yes,
the devil.
Definitely.
The devil took me about 5 or 6 tries to do, but I can do,
yeah,
it even right now. If I go back and do the devil, I could do it very, very quickly. So I,
yeah,
love, I can't wait for the DLC. I cannot wait.
Me
for that.
Too. I got super excited. I just found out about that. I found out about an accident,
yeah,
and, I guess it's coming out sometime this year, but we don't have an exact release date. My daughter's super pumped because apparently you get to play as Miss Chalice,
yeah,
and she wants to play as a female character.
They announced
the
that so long ago, too, so I'm excited for it. It's going to be great.
You know, that bullet hell section with the robot didn't really bother me at all.
Yeah.
It was the beginning.
Really?
It's the first section of that boss where you have to destroy the thing on his head,
yeah,
and then the chest and the like lower chamber. And when you destroy them, it changes what they do.
Yeah.
So you kind of have like 2 rounds, essentially. And for some reason, I had to figure out the exact order to do those based on which thing was the smallest nuisance to,
yeah,
me. Because they all just drove me nuts. And once I kind of figured out that I like them to all be like damaged mutually,
yeah,
I'd kind of pop between them so I can kill them all really close to about the same time so that one of them doesn't catch me and drive me bananas. Then I was able to kind of get through it. But the second part of it I could kind of walk through, but it was that beginning area that would just deplete me down to nothing.
Yeah.
It drove me absolutely bonkers. But got through it, survived. How about I throw some Nintendo headlines at you, yep, and you rate it on your Jason level of excitement.
All right, let's do it.
Now, Mario Kart Tour, I know you're a big fan, just added multiplayer mode. Is that enough to make
you... Yes. I'm out. I'm out. Like, there's nothing they could do at this point, short of putting other Nintendo characters in the game, that would get me back into it. I tried to play it again, and I'm just bored. Like, the idea, just the idea of getting rubies again and rolling the dice for characters makes me just never want to start that game up again.
Yeah.
So I know that sounds very, I don't know, just cynical, but
it kind of seems like the sentiment. I'm sure that there are players out there because the game's obviously doing very well, but
yeah,
I'm with you right there. The multiplayer does not suck me back in. I think that my time with that game, while I did enjoy it, is a thing of the past.
I'm going to jump in for the headlines, though, and give you a headline.
Oh, throw it at me.
We have Ring Fit's spirits coming to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, including Drago? What is his name again?
Drago.
Is it Drago? Okay, yeah. Drago, the Ring Fit trainer, obviously the ring itself. Does he have a name? I can't remember. Ringy?
Ring. I like Ringy better. I think he's just Ring.
I'm going to call him Ringo.
I did not know about that until like 20 seconds before we started recording. You told me, and I wasn't even for sure that it was real until I jumped out of Twitter and saw for myself. I am super excited about that. I feel like Ring Fit is really an underrated game. I know it's successful in Japan, but I don't hear a lot of talk about it. And I really wanted Drago and Smash bad, at least in some way. I think he's one of the greatest villains in modern Nintendo. I think Spirit is the right place to put him. I guess a little bit, I don't want to say let down, because I'm glad that they're here.
Yeah.
But I had hope that we were going to get a Ring Fit representative in one of these next DLC characters. I think I even predicted one for my video. But this would seem to me to indicate that that's not especially likely, because typically playable characters are released with spirits, and you'd think that they would have saved these for that if that was going to be the route they were going to go.
Agreed.
But I'm happy that the game gets some Smash acknowledgement, and I would love it. I'm like a spirit addict.
Yeah.
Anytime they do it, I got to get in there. So I'm super pumped for these ones. They're coming on the 13th, it looks like, and they'll be playable through the 18th of this month. So I'm going to mark that on my calendar. I'm going to get in there, and I'm going to collect these last three so I can stay 100%.
There you go. Nice.
We got another bit of news here. Reggie has been tapped by GameStop.
Yeah.
I saw that you had even reported on that a little bit earlier in the week.
Yeah,
what do you think
about that? I'm happy for that. I like that news. I'm one of the few people, I feel like, in the entire world that respects GameStop enough to keep going. People give GameStop a lot of crap. They're like, oh, they give you $10 of trading credit for this or that. Don't sell it to them. If you don't want to trade it in, don't trade it in. They're not putting a gun to anybody's head. You can keep your games. You can put it on eBay. It's a convenience factor. And from time to time, they have decent deals. Like, they've had deals where, you know, for every game you trade in, you get $5 extra, and I could trade in the most crappy games ever and get an insane amount of, like, credit. So I've had no issue with GameStop in the past. We need a game store, a brick-and-mortar game store, to keep things semi-like the way they used to be before we go completely all digital on everything. And the moment that GameStop goes under, you're going to see people regretting it. You're going to see people that wish that there was something left that they could go and just, like, be surrounded by it. If you go to Best Buy, you get cell phones, you get security systems and refrigerators, and you get video games. But at GameStop, you get pop culture and video games, and that's it. And I'm going to miss them if they go. And I think Reggie sees that. I think Reggie sees that having a brick-and-mortar video game store like GameStop around is good for the gaming industry. So I'm hoping it sticks around. I'm hoping Reggie really does good with GameStop.
I definitely have some very positive GameStop experiences myself. I've made friends with GameStop employees. I've definitely gotten hundreds of amiibo from GameStop for the purposes of customizing.
Yeah.
And I have to say that for myself, the more GameStop has moved away from the gaming trade and gotten into gaming merchandise and paraphernalia, the more attracted I am to them as a store. And I feel like they're one of the only places you can go where you can get video game related toys and clothes and board games. I would like to see even more of that. I think that might be the best way for them to kind of go in the future, is instead of being exclusively about used and new games, which they've never really been the best at when it comes to new games. They're usually higher priced than anybody else. They've tried a lot of different models. I know that employees have, a lot of them have been very disgruntled about the way that they're kind of having to push certain programs. I get that. I can see easily how it's a failing business model, but I definitely agree with you that there is a place for it in the world. And I would be sad to see it go, just like I was to see Toys R Us go.
Yeah.
It's just like another place where you can go and experience a tangible piece of what you love. And I hope that they can figure out a way to make it work out. And Reggie's definitely the guy.
I feel like there is a happy medium for profitability and just fun for the customers. And I'm not sure what that is. I've seen stores that have really focused on like the community aspect of gaming. They've had like GameCubes and like Super Smash Bros. Going. They have retro video game stations. I mean, I think that's what's going to do it. I would love to
I wonder if they got into, and this may be completely jumping the shark, but I wonder if they got into food. I wonder if GameStop made themselves like a place where you could go and eat and game, and it was kind of more of a social hub. Not maybe a Dave and Buster's, but maybe a way where you can go and play a lot of the games. They have more installations where you can kind of interact with them.
Yeah.
And then also, by the way, you can buy this here, or you can get that here, take this t-shirt, that kind of stuff. Maybe contests, things. I don't know. It's just spitballing, but you hope they figure something out.
Now, if it was me, and I'm going to give Reggie this piece of advice on how you can save GameStop.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is very important, so make sure you listen to this. Bring back Funko Land. The older I get, the more I am leaving the idea of getting excited about most major video game releases. I'm not into competitive first-person shooters. There's very few AAA games that I go nuts about. Most of them are Nintendo. But like Final Fantasy VII Remake is probably one of the major exceptions, The Last of Us Part 2. But by and large, like Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty, not my cup of tea. That being said, I'm very attracted to retro games. I love retro game hunting. I love playing retro games on the NES or the NES Classic, the Super NES Classic, Nintendo 64. GameStop owns the IP of Funko Land. They own that name. They could create a series of retro stores where you could go in, you could buy retro video games, you could trade retro video games just like you could at Funko Land. You could play retro video games with your friends, kind of like you said, have like pizza, like make it like this 80s and early 90s aesthetic, set up some arcade one-ups for people to play. I mean, retro video game stores are pretty relevant. They're all over the place. And I think with the name like Funko Land, they could really do something cool. And I'm not saying convert GameStop into that, but make it, put one in every state. Make it like the retro gaming mecca with the old rainbow Funko Land logo right above the counter. That warm, gooey feeling of seeing the NES games and the Sega Genesis games. I would love that. I mean, if I had the money, I would totally love to buy that IP. Like, Funko Land, for me, is, like, the epitome of my childhood. Like, if I could own that and set something up, I would. Heck, if I could buy a t-shirt, I would. So if you take none of this to heart, Reggie, at least sell the Funko Land t-shirts in your store. I'll buy one. A coffee mug. But yeah, that's my thought on it.
I get it. I think it's less immediately obvious what Funko Land is versus GameStop, where
I agree,
like the name, and so I wonder about, to the layman, what it would mean. But like you, I definitely have some very fond Funko Land memories.
It would have to be designed specifically surrounding retro games, like that would be it. The people that are typically into retro games at this point know what Funko Land is.
That's for sure.
At least I'd think so. But
I wonder if they can chew up a big enough chunk of the market share for it to be profitable. I think that if anybody could figure this thing out, Reggie's the man.
He is the man to do it.
They're in good hands. All right, we got another headline for you. This one is gaming adjacent. Netflix just launched season 3 of Castlevania. Have you been following that series at all?
I watched the first 2 episodes of season 1. I did not like it. It was fine. I have played Castlevania. I have beaten all of the Game Boy Advance Castlevanias. So Harmony of Dissonance, Circle of the Moon, all very, very good games. I am not like you, where I'm a diehard Castlevania fan. I'm playing Symphony of the Night right now, which is fun. I'm enjoying that game quite a bit. But there's something about just like animated vampires that it's not doing a lot for me. I mean, I'm one of the few people that doesn't like The Witcher. Like, I just can't watch that show either. So I'm not saying it's bad. I just have bad taste, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I definitely think that it appeals to a certain type of taste. I wouldn't say that you necessarily have bad taste. It scratches a few itches for me.
Yeah.
I love action. The choreography is excellent. And the acting is tremendous. And I also have probably the strongest connection to Castlevania 3 out of any of the Castlevania games that I've ever played.
Is this based on Castlevania 3?
It's based on Castlevania 3, where you have... Okay. It's the first departure from... I believe, I'm not actually sure who you play as in the Game Boy ones or the timeline, but at least with the NES, in the first 2 games, you play as Simon Belmont.
Yeah.
And then the third one, you play as Trevor Belmont, who is an ancestor of Simon. And it's the first one to include playable characters other than a Belmont. So you also can play as Alucard, a pirate named Grant, and then... Sypha, a kind of mage lady. And so being able to re-experience a game that was very powerful in my childhood in this kind of very dynamic storytelling format, I have found to be really engaging. It takes a lot of departures from the games, obviously, for dramatic effect. And the games are, it's an NES game, so the story is pretty, I would say, bullet pointy.
Yeah.
Like you have, but in my head at the time, like most Nintendo games did, all I needed was the bullet points, and I would fill in the gaps myself with my own imagination, which is why I've never really felt like story was terribly critical
sure.
with those types of games, because I just needed the premise. Tell me what's going on. Tell me what the situation is. I'll tell the story. And so seeing somebody else adapt this has really been a joy for me, so I already binge-watched the whole season 3, and so now I can move on with life. But like they tend to do, it ends in such a way as I just want a bunch more. And it'll probably be a year or so until we get any more, if we ever do.
Yeah.
So a big thumbs up from me, but if it's, I could see why it appeals to me. I'm exactly the person who they're making it for.
So if I want to watch season 3, I'm assuming I need to finish 1 and 2. They're connected.
They're so intrinsically connected that you'd be wasting your time, I think.
Got it.
I think you can enjoy it. Like if you jump in anywhere.
Yeah. I'll give it a shot. I mean, I'll start over. I'll start it over. I will commit to you. By next podcast, I will have season 1 done.
Season 1, I think, is easy because it's only 4 episodes.
Oh, yeah, easy.
They might be longer form. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But
you know, I watched 2 or 3. So I might just have 1 episode to catch up on.
You might be close.
All right.
It kind of ramps up. It ramps up. I actually would say that while I was with it from the beginning...
Yeah.
The more characters you meet and the deeper they get entrenched in their missions or their objectives, the more exciting, twisted, and kind of riveting the story becomes.
Yeah. I'll give it a shot. You have my commitment.
I'd like to get your thoughts on it. Along the same lines, they just announced recently a Mortal Kombat Legends Scorpion's Revenge animated movie that's kind of in the same style as Castlevania.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be a direct-to-video kind of thing.
Yep.
And it looks like it's telling the story of the first Mortal Kombat, presumably from the perspective of Scorpion. Does that do anything for you?
No. Don't care. I am done with gritty animation for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've just committed to Castlevania, so I guess I'm
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I was going to say. you got at least a couple hours of it left.
So gritty animation is it's fine. But can I just I'd rather watch Wee Bear Bears with my daughter at this point.
Yeah.
I just want to have I want to have a good time watching it, you know, rather than watching people getting their limbs cut off in beautiful Technicolor. So I'm fine. If you want to watch it, that's fine. I'm good.
You know, I find it a lot more palatable in stylized animated form.
Yeah.
I guess I've never really been too much of a fan of gratuitous gore.
Yeah.
Which I know kind of flies in the face of being a huge Mortal Kombat fan. But to me, Mortal Kombat has become like almost stomach-turning realistic.
Yeah.
Recently, like maybe Mortal Kombat 9 and beyond, but like 1, 2, and 3, where you had like pretty pixelated, realistic humans doing very stylized things,
yeah.
It didn't bother me at all because there was a degree of removed from reality. The more realistic it looks, the more I'm like, ooh, I don't know if that's for me. But seeing these like awesome animated things, some of the stuff that Trevor Belmont does with his whip,
yeah.
And some of the things that they show Scorpion, Sub-Zero doing in the trailer for this, that really kind of appeals to me. Maybe I'm a gross dude.
I mean, the older I get, it's such an old man thing to say. The older I get, the more I just don't see, like, I'm not against it. I'm not against gratuitous violence. that sounds really bad too. Let me rephrase it. I don't think that having that kind of thing, like the insane violence in Mortal Kombat, is a bad thing. I think it's kind of charming to a certain degree because it's so B-movie violent.
Right.
Where it's so ridiculous that it's kind of funny in its own right.
Yeah.
But for me, I enjoy just watching the old 1997 PG-13 Mortal Kombat. No blood, no gore, just campy. It's fun. I don't need to watch a guy... Like in the trailer for this Mortal Kombat movie, this animated one... I think Scorpion like delimbed several people. Like this is the trailer.
Yeah.
Like guys are getting ripped into pieces. I'm like, well, they're not holding anything back. I wonder what the real movie's gonna have in it. And again, that's not a bad thing.
I don't know why I think it's so awesome.
Like I'm obsessed with Kill Bill, and my favorite scene in Kill Bill is that very famous dinner scene where they're in that club and everybody's getting their limbs cut off.
Yeah,
like it's. It's great and it's campy, but when it comes to animation and stuff like that, I'm going to take a step back from it. I don't need any more gratuitous violence in my life right now.
All right, let's end this movie preview on a slightly less gratuitously violent note. This is not new news, but we haven't discussed it, and I'm curious to get your take on it. The Pokemon Mewtwo Strikes Back movie just released on Netflix.
It did, yeah.
And I saw it. Did you have a chance to see it?
I have not. I started to. What I just found out was when I wasn't home, my daughter started to watch it, and she watched it without me. She watched the entire thing without me, which I'm not used to, by the way. She's 7, so I'm not used to these things. But she loved it. She loved it. But she's also a very big fan of Detective Pikachu, one of her favorite films. So there's a lot of parallel between Detective Pikachu and this. In fact, the entire opening sequence from Mewtwo Strikes Back is very, very similar to the direction they go with Mewtwo in Detective Pikachu, if you've never seen that. So I think she liked to see that from a different perspective. She knows how much I like Mew as a character, and Mew is kind of like the whole point of this whole thing. But I did start to watch it. The animation style is cool. I'm never gonna get over the fact that Brock has a new voice actor, like ever. Like I know that it's been 20 plus years and things have to change, but hearing Brock with a completely different voice from my childhood it's just weird for me. But again, you're talking to a 34-year-old Pokemon fan, so.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really mine anymore. It's the other generations, too.
You know, this is weird. I did see the original movie in theaters when it came. And I only saw it once, that one time.
Yeah.
And then I just, I would say, half watched it. My kids had it on and I was coming and going in the room. But I saw enough of it. I feel like I just watched the same movie twice.
Yeah.
There was enough time that had lapsed in between where... I remembered it, but I didn't fully remember it. A lot of people have been levying some criticisms against how they depicted the humans from an art perspective. Did not bother me at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it looked to me exactly like I remembered it looking.
Yeah. It looked fine. So, I had no issue with it. I mean, Pokemon is one of the few franchises that hasn't jumped the shark and gone completely CG. So it was different to see it that way. Do I want to see all Pokemon movies in this style? Absolutely not. I like traditional animation. I like the anime feel to it. In Japan, in anime are so just interconnected, I can't imagine they would ever go that route, even if it's cheaper to a certain degree. Hand-drawn animation is a lot more expensive than CGI. But it's nice to see something different. It's nice to see the same story being told in a different way.
Sure. And like you said, your daughter watched it without you. This movie might not be for us. Like, people like us might watch it,
yeah. But
my daughter's the same age, and she sat there riveted also. So it is kind of nice how something that we enjoyed as kids could be reimagined,
yeah,
so that our kids can also experience it and enjoy it in a new, fresh way.
And that's what they're doing. They know what they're doing. I mean, the Pokemon company knows what they're doing. They did it with the Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. They know that the people that played those games on the Game Boy when they came out have kids at an age that can play these games now too. So they know, by dangling that nostalgia carrot in front of our face, that we're going to buy this for our kids, which I heck did. And the same thing with this movie. It's like, I remember that movie. I remember getting the ancient Mew card at the movie theater. I'm going to put this on for my kid. They know what they're doing. And very soon, I'm not sure when, they're going to stop pandering to us. And you're starting to see it. Kanto was the only thing that was selling back in the day. And when I say back in the day, even a few years ago, they were just like re-putting out everything on Kanto. Like, it's all the Kanto starters. And you're starting to slowly see that shift away with Sword and Shield, where the only Kanto starter that you had was Charizard. Now, with Pokemon Bank, you can get all of them.
Sure.
But that being said, I think they're stopping the pandering to us because they know that we've already done our job, and that is introduce our kids to it. And they have their own, you know, thing now. Greninja is like on the top of the list of like most favorite Pokemon or, you know, the best Pokemon of ever lists.
Good job, Masahiro Sakurai, predicting that before the game even released.
Yeah, right.
In Smash Brothers. That was good on him.
So, yeah, I've accepted the fact that Pokemon's no longer mine. It is definitely my daughter's just as much as it's mine. And very soon it's going to be more hers than it is mine. So, and that's the circle of life, my friend. I'm happy.
Yeah. Yep. There's another bit of big news that you surprised me with right before we started recording. I had just read that E3 was still happening, but they were going to keep a look on it. And then you surprised me that sources are now reporting E3 2020 will be canceled within 24 hours.
Yeah, I want to preface this real quick that we're recording this on Mario Day, so March 10th. It is 9:26 p.m. Central Time. At this point, E3, the ESA, has not made an announcement that E3 is going to be canceled. However, multiple sources are coming forward, including Devolver Digital, who is at E3 every single year. Jason Schreier from Kotaku, who is an incredibly reliable source when it comes to talking to people within the video game industry, that E3 is in fact going to be canceled officially by tomorrow morning. The ESA has started to reach out to developers and people that were going to be not attending, but presenting at E3, letting them know that that's what's going to happen. So the word is pretty much spreading around like wildfire right now that if you are going, or you were going, cancel your flight, cancel your hotel. Thank God I didn't book mine because I thought this might happen. But it
obviously don't do anything till you hear for sure. Yeah. I imagine by the time you listen to this podcast, it will probably already be sorted out.
There's no way, shape, or form that this is a rumor at this point. The amount of people coming out, very reputable people within the video game industry that are making statements like this. They're doing so with a great degree of certainty. I tend to not like to talk about depressing things on the podcast, but the coronavirus is spreading like wildfire here. Coachella just got shut down. You had South by Southwest get canceled almost like, I think, 2 days before it was supposed to begin. Everything is shutting down here. For good reason too. I mean, E3 is an international press event. You have people from China, from Japan, from Germany, from the UK, I mean, from every continent besides Antarctica, on the planet, like, coming together for this event. And it makes sense to not have it. Even though it seems like it's far away, I can't imagine the ESA would feel comfortable saying, let's wait and see. Let's get this stuff. Like, I guess the longer they wait, the more money they would lose. So it's sure. One of these things where it's complicated. And I've gone to E3 now for the past 5 years, and I was looking forward to going for a sixth. But it's one of these things that I totally get the decision. From a Nintendo standpoint, Nintendo has always done their directs anyway, so we're fine there. We've discussed that before. And granted, I mean, E3 has been kind of like in a death spiral, I'd say for the last 2 years.
Maybe even longer. It's definitely harder and harder to justify its existence as video game developers have more and more of a platform to be able to get the word out to the people. But I think it is a way for smaller developers to be able to meet with big companies like Nintendo to kind of broker deals, and without having all of those movers and shakers in one place at one time. I wonder how much that's going to impact the business. As far as the user experience, like the player experience goes, I don't really think it's going to have that much of an impact, because we're still going to get all of that juicy news. What has me a little bit more concerned is the 2020 Olympics in Japan, because that's the kind of thing where there's no digital substitute for the Olympics, and it's happening at the same time as E3, so it makes me wonder if Japan is going to be able to sort that out.
I mean, Japan is being overly precautious right now. Just surrounding, you can tell they don't want to lose the Olympics. You can tell.
Sure.
But I guess my question to you is this. I have some big thoughts about E3 potentially being canceled. All signs pointing to that's the case. I feel like the fact that this is canceled could be the final nail in E3's coffin, where if they can if they just say, we're done, we can't do it this year, or we have to delay it. Developers they're on a time schedule. They need to get this stuff announced mid-year. Nintendo has to get stuff announced mid-year to get the hype built for Christmas. The same thing for other companies too. Microsoft, Sony. Sony's not even doing E3 anyway, so it doesn't matter from them. So these people are going to be forced to do it without this big platform they had before. So they're going to go the Nintendo route and digitally announce their stuff. And part of me feels like after that, everybody's finally going that route. Is there really a need for E3 anymore? Especially after what we saw last year with just the absolutely ridiculous treatment of how they completely leaked, mine included, all the details, the phone numbers, the addresses to the attendees of the show. I think it's lost a lot of trust. And I think 1 year, especially right now, which I think this would have been one of the most critical years for E3 to make up for what they did last year, to show that, you know, we're on top of this. We're not going to let this happen again. We can put on a good show. I think the fact that it's not happening this year is going to kill them.
It's definitely lost a lot of its luster, and it's lost its original purpose, which was to allow media advance access to upcoming video games so that they can report it to interested parties. Yeah. That's what it was originally designed to do, and it now no longer is needed. I feel like E3 has been obsolete for maybe the past 5 or 6 years, to be honest. Maybe even the last 10 years. But people have continued to go because it's something that people look forward to and people enjoy. And video games have been able to be celebrated, and they've been able to make events out of it. But has it been needed? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I really don't think so.
We live in a very, very different world now compared to even where we were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And if Nintendo has proven anything, and Nintendo is typically on the forefront of trying new things and doing a very, very good job at it, if State of Play from Sony is any indication of how they completely ripped off Nintendo's Direct, I can see this being the new standard. Just digital press conferences, go from there, set up some kiosks at Best Buy, send a demo. That's all you need.
Even Even Yacht Club, so even smaller developers just recently did their own Nintendo Inspired Direct, and I think it went over really well. I watched it, I enjoyed it. If everybody who makes games just starts making small, informal videos that are fun to watch about their games, people will tune in. I think it might just be the direction that it's the direction we've been going for a long time.
Yeah.
But this is maybe, like you said, the nail in the coffin for E3.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So, like I said before, we filmed this on, recorded this on March 10th. By the time you listen to this, I'm going to do my best to get this out tomorrow anyway. The announcement should have been made, but I'm expecting this to be probably 9 a.m. tomorrow. So it's kind of a sad day to a certain degree, but I think there's bigger fish to fry at the moment. I mean, my work outside of Nintendo Wire, that is, they're already getting us ready to potentially work from home. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things more important right now than a video game convention. So I hope everybody stays safe. Wash your hands, people. And hopefully we get through the other side of this pretty quick.
Sounds good. And then the last bit of news, which will segue us right into our celebration of Mario Day. There is a very provocative Mario Lego reveal that appeared yesterday for me. And there's like no explanation for what we're seeing. So, of course, speculation is running wild. Yeah. Are these physical sets that we're going to get? Is this some kind of video game thing? So I did read the article that Nintendo Wire put up, but I want to get your personal thoughts on that.
Yeah. Jason. So I actually wrote one of the articles called Six Things We Want to See from the Lego Super Mario Partnership. But before we get into what I want to see, we'll give you the details of what specifically happened. It was a 7-second video that Nintendo put out of an obviously Lego-y looking Mario. It's not a minifig. Mm-hmm. Minifigs are the very tiny figures in Lego, if you didn't know for some reason. Think the Lego movie. You'll know what I mean. It's not a minifig. It looks bigger. There is LCD screens for the eyes, for the mouth, and on its chest. On the chest, it looks like it's moving, like some sort of game. And it's standing on what appears to be some sort of button. That being said, it looks like some sort of game piece. It looks like it's going to be something like a small piece of something bigger, whether that be something like a board game, very similar to Funkoverse that came out. Have you heard of Funkoverse?
I have not.
Yeah, Funkoverse is a board game that Funko put out, and they have mini pop figures that you can buy in like booster packs. And it's a board game that you use your pops with. So perhaps this is some sort of like device to play a board game. Maybe. But maybe it's connected to the Switch. Maybe whatever this thing is, the button and the LCD, maybe it's some sort of controller for a Lego-themed Mario game. Maybe it's something that is completely altogether different. Maybe it's just like a little Mario alarm clock or something with eyes and a mouth that moves or whatever. But that being said, we have no idea if we're getting sets. We have no idea if we're getting minifigs. We have no idea really what this thing is at all.
All it says is something fun is being built.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. So we're tuned.
We are tuned. There is one major rumor that came out today, and this is coming from a German Lego site. Let me see if I can pull this up. Yes, here we go. The article is on NintendoWire.com. It's called Rumor, Potential Codename for Lego Super Mario May Reveal Upcoming Wave of Sets. This comes from a website called StoneWars.de. Now, according to them, they found this Lego codename a while back with these sets, and they were trying to figure out what this codename was related to, and it was called Lego Leaf. Now, the codename was floating around apparently for a few months. Nobody had any idea, but apparently, not Nintendo, Lego has been shopping this around to big retailers, letting them know that, hey, these are coming. And according to this source, they have confirmed that Lego Leaf, again, this is a rumor, or speculation possibly, Lego Leaf is Mario. So there are, according to them, let's see, I think they said there was like 13 sets. 13 sets in total, ranging from $3.99 all the way up to $100. The $3.99 sets are typically just like minifigure blind bags. So if you've ever seen like the Simpsons blind bags or the Disney blind bags, you get one figure inside, which that would be amazing if they did that. And then, like I said, 13 additional sets, which could range from very small to very large. So I'm really hoping we see a huge variety of just Lego goodness from the Mushroom Kingdom, which makes me kind of curious, TJ. I guess, are you a Lego fan to begin with?
I would say not explicitly,
sure.
Although there have been, I'm not a Lego fan per se, but I am a fan of some of the things that Lego has done,
yeah.
Which has made me want to get in them. When I was younger, I had this just incredible castle set.
Yeah.
And I needed to buy every piece to that. I saved for a while because Legos are not cheap.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of the same deal where there were some that were just like a cart and horse that you could buy for $7 or $8, and then a castle that was 100
yeah.
plus. And I really liked getting those, and I really enjoyed building them. And I could definitely see how what I had from that could easily translate into the Mario universe. You've got Bowser's castle,
yeah.
Peach's castle, all manner of different things that could be reconstructed out of the Mario world. I think that I personally would be more excited if it was not a tactile set.
Sure.
Or that if it was a tactile set, that it had some kind of Lego Dimension / Amiibo
sure.
video game interaction where you could use your NFC technology to interface what you're building physically with something that is actually gamified in some way.
Yeah.
I think that would be the meeting of the two worlds in a way that would excite me the most, is if it was not necessarily just something physical, not necessarily just something that's a game. But Lego has famously made some of the most exciting video game adaptations by Lego-fying
yeah.
things like Harry Potter and Star Wars and Jurassic Park. Some really fun stuff where they can be cheeky with the source material
yeah.
and put their own little Lego stamp on it. The Marvel one comes to mind also. So,
Lego Star Wars has been great.
Sure. And, of course, Lego Dimensions, which combines everything. If they could do that with Mario, and I never got into Lego Dimensions myself,
yeah.
probably because it didn't have Nintendo. If Mario was in that, I probably would have a lot more into it. So if this is like a Mario world that can somehow utilize this, that would be super exciting.
Yeah.
And because Lego does have the Lego Dimensions pedigree, this it wouldn't be entirely new. It would kind of be like the perfect marriage, in my opinion, if they can find some way to like expand on Amiibo by also utilizing Lego.
Yeah.
It's like a build your own Amiibo kind of thing. And of course that appeals to me because I've been customizing Amiibo since they came out. So this seems like it would be right up my alley if they went that route.
So this might be shocking to hear, but this is one of these things that I'm not all that interested in these becoming Amiibo. There is something, so I've been a Lego fan for some time. I like building the sets. I've collected minifigs for a pretty long time. If you go to my desk at work, it is littered with minifigs. I want to see traditional sets from this because there's something therapeutic about building a very large Lego set. For example, the last big one I did was the Simpsons house, and it was a multiple day project, and it was just fun. I like setting these things up, and the people at Lego that design these things are masters at their craft. Like, they look darn good. So the idea that we could get, and I consider Lego to be art, we could get this brick art that we could put together ourselves of things like Bowser's airship, or just like a little set with like a Goomba or a Yoshi or like a question block that you can put together. Something even as big as Princess Peach's castle, very similar to what we saw with the $350 Disney castle that Lego put out. And that thing is big. And I can
yeah,
imagine what that would look like with Princess Peach's castle. Like, that would be awe-inspiring to me. I'd be so
thrilled. I'll tell you
what
turns me off of it a little bit, and this is a me thing,
yeah.
I'll confess. I have very young kids who I could never say, hey, don't play with this.
Yeah.
But yet, if I had that in my house, they would drive me up the wall.
You gotta put it up high.
Losing pieces and stuff like that. So I think it would be the kind of thing I would very much want to have and the kind of experience I would want to be able to share with them. I'm sure my daughter
yeah.
could do it. She's 7 years old. But my 5-year-old and my 3-year-old, there, I'd be finding Lego castle pieces all over the house. And there's just something about, you know, if I had to think of one thing that really gets under Hero TJ's skin, it's a missing puzzle piece or a missing Lego piece. Like that, like something about that, I irrationally lose my cool about. I did have to ban puzzles from our house for that very reason. until my kids get a little bit older. So maybe it's a little too premature for me, but I can definitely see the appeal to it, and it's definitely on my radar.
Yeah.
I am surprised, though, that part of you doesn't want that amiibo.
Not yet. I mean, they have to earn it first. I want to see Lego build.
You don't think that Dimensions kind of established a pretty good foothold into the Toys to Life kind of genre?
Yes and no. So, to the two, I guess, their own unique style, I guess, yes. There's a massive bug on my desk, by the way, which is like, I just look down, I'm like, what is that? Like, ugh, whatever, I'm going to let it sit there for the time being. Nothing that I've seen that would translate into the platformy goodness that is Mario. But like when I say earn it first, I'm saying make some sets first. Make the castle, make the figures. I want to see what Mario is going to look like in this Lego-y world first, and then go from there. Stand by. I got to get rid of this bug. It is big.
What kind of bug is it?
I think it's a stink bug.
Oh. Yeah, unfortunately, you guys can't appreciate the aroma, so maybe Jason's desk is kicking off.
It's crunchy!
Oh.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that Amiibo Jason just added a new bug to his museum collection in Animal Crossing.
I did. I'm going to keep this in the video part of the podcast, too, because this is going to be a segment for video. So, yeah, I got to keep that part in. But I want to, I guess going back to it, I want to see the sets. I want to see these just bricky Mario sets first and then make a game later. Like Lego Star Wars, for instance, I think is a good example. Lego Star Wars has been out in toy form forever, and then they built a game on it. And I get that Mario is a game character. I guess Mario is video games.
Sure.
But I just want to see some sets first, and I hope they can do that. But just based on the teaser we saw, we're not getting just sets. There is something very, very distinct about this LCD-eyed and mouthed Mario, something that I cannot put my finger on yet, but it's part of something bigger. It definitely is, and what that is yet to be seen. It could be a board game. It could be just a little toy, which I doubt. Or it could be something that ties into a video game. So I think we have very little time to wait. My guess is it's going to be during the next Nintendo Direct, which is, again, rumored for sometime this year or sometime this month.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll get something this year.
Maybe this year. You never know. I mean, E3's canceled. I mean, Nintendo, there's just nothing.
Well, in a perfect world, when you combine two separate things and put them together, and you want to see the identity of both of those things. And with Lego being intrinsically about building and Mario being Mr. Video Game himself, being able to have some of each flavor combined into one incredible dish would, I think, be the most satisfying end result.
Yeah.
But certainly my imagination is running wild, which is, I know, what Nintendo was intending with this provocative tweet. So I'm definitely going to keep my ear to the ground on this.
Now that I think of it, though, if they do something with Amiibo, with Lego, it's going to rejuvenate Amiibo in a way that I could not imagine.
I know. That's why I'm so surprised. It might not be Amiibo specifically, but utilizing the NFC technology, or maybe even kind of what they did with Labo, where you're taking advantage of the technology of the Switch to be able to bring your toys into the game somehow. It might not be Amiibo. I use Amiibo as the example because that's my most, I guess, the most apt comparison to what we've seen from Lego before. But it could just as easily be something like Labo, where, could you imagine, instead of building things with cardboard, you're building it with Lego. and then you're being able to somehow use these in a game. That would be really awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe I would even prefer it to be something like that, because it's like a more permanent version of Labo that could be deconstructed. And Labo, I guess, was good enough for what it is, but I don't imagine it caught on in the way that Nintendo intended. And they were about building something fun and unlocking your imagination, and it definitely showcased some interesting technology. And Nintendo, I don't feel like, has fully tapped into all of the potential of that idea. And a partnership with Lego could be a really dynamic way to be able to, I guess, resurrect that idea and maybe fulfill it more completely than they were able to do with Labo.
It could be interesting. It really could be. I don't want to gear myself up for disappointment, though. So sure. I'm keeping my expectations relatively low at the moment.
Not me. I'm like, I'm way out there.
It's fun to speculate so, we'll for see. Sure, but watch it be like absolutely garbage. It's not. It's not going to be. You have two of the biggest companies in, and I don't say that Nintendo's like a toy company, but they are to a certain degree.
They are, yeah.
You have two of the biggest toy companies in the world joining forces for the very first time. And believe it or not, Lego and Nintendo used to be competitors. Nintendo used to make building blocks back when they made toys to compete directly with Lego. So seeing these two former competitors come together to make something great, I'm excited. So,
and Nintendo has licensed their characters to like a Lego competitor.
Yeah, like Mega Bloks exactly or some garbage
Mega
like
Bloks.
That.
Yeah, and they're like compatible with Lego.
Yeah.
But it's not Lego. So I guess that deal must have expired
Thank
or something.
God.
I can't imagine that Mega Bloks wouldn't have a do not compete. So that would lead me to believe that's a thing of the past, and now Lego's taking this opportunity to strike.
Yeah.
Maybe this deal's been in development for a while.
But yeah, I'm excited either way. I really am. But before we end it tonight, I do have a small piece of Breath of the Wild trivia for you.
Ooh, lay this on me.
So I was thinking about this because you've played the game so much, so I want to take you back to the very beginning of the game.
Okay.
So one of the very first things you can do in Breath
Open
of the Wild
eyes.
Is run into an old man, and I'm not going to spoil who that old man is, and he is sitting on a hill. And if you talk to him, he gives you an item. What is that item?
I do very vividly remember this moment. And I remember running up towards the man. At this point, I probably already have a couple apples, a stick, and a bug. And I know I quickly acquire an axe. I do believe he says something to the effect of, hey, what, are you guys just going to take that without asking? Nah, you can have it. But because of those items that I already have now, I'm not sure if I'm confusing which one I actually take from him. I'm going to say I take his apple.
You take his apple. Baked apple, but yes.
Okay.
Correct. He is giving you the first tutorial that you can take food from the tree that's growing next to him and cook it. So it is Breath of the Wild's very fancy way of showing you that you can cook foods to make something that is more nutritious for Link to enjoy. So good job. I will give you that one, even though you didn't specify the apple was baked. But I'll give that to you.
You're a generous kid.
I surely am. Hero TJ, where can the good folks at home find you?
Check me out on YouTube at the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel. We've got some custom conquest out there, and also a video that I had a lot of fun with that has gained a little bit of traction, where I speculate about what of the six fighters are coming to Smash Brothers. Give that one a watch, and definitely let me know who your thoughts are.
Are you at 100,000 views for that one yet?
It's getting up there, and I've had a lot of fun going back to it because people have sparked some really interesting conversation in the comments section, and making me think about characters maybe I hadn't originally thought of, or maybe kind of reasons why some of the characters I predicted are more or less likely. So a lot of people have been agreeing with my picks, and other people think I'm a complete lunatic. And no matter what case it is, I really enjoyed the conversation. So if you have a thought on the matter out there, then please don't be shy. Let me know what you think. And you can find me on Twitter at Custom Conquest.
Awesome. If you want to see any more of my antics, my console modding, anything I'm up to, my personal Twitter account is @AmiiboJason. Otherwise, you can find me over at NintendoWire.com, on Twitter at NinWire, at Amiibo News, which we are still alive at Amiibo News. Here's hoping we get some Amiibo News to share soon. And obviously, the other place would be right here. I say right here, even though the podcast is never on YouTube in its entirety. But you can find me on YouTube at YouTube.com/NintendoWire. But yeah, that's going to do it from us tonight. But like I always say, guys, until next time, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.